C-167. Number 1B.
All right. You take now this chart. I refer now this week just to this as our chart, our layout, so to say, of the chapters. And we will use this for the next few hours, and we recapitulate now what we have been thinking over the last 3 years. So if you take this chart, the title is The 7 Main Subjects in the First 4 Chapters of Science and Health. It actually recapitulates only what you have already in the epitome book that you have been using over the last 3 years. What I have written here are those main epitomes that in the epitome book are written in bold types, not the subtones, so only those main subjects that are printed in bold types. So it's actually nothing new. It's just showing it in an overall format. So what have we seen in those first 4 chapters? We have first of all seen that we have the chapter prayer in the first column. Then afterwards in the textbook you have atonement and Eucharist. Then afterwards marriage. Then the next big column that has 3 sub-columns. We have chapter 4, Christian Science versus Spiritualism. We have seen that the first chapter is the Word as the Word. You have it there in that column. And the Word as the Christ, Word as Christianity, and Word as Science. So that we get here the very first vertical in the matrix of the textbook, namely the Word in its 4 aspect. Then we have tried to epitomize each chapter and to give to each chapter an epitome that brings out the inner meaning of each chapter. When I say prayer, then I don't know really what I mean by prayer. The Catholics have prayer, the Jews have prayer, everybody has prayer. We actually don't know what prayer is. But if we take the textbook and analyze the textbook and ask ourselves what is actually prayer, what are the main factors that constitute a prayer, then we have tried to epitomize that in as short a way as possible, because an epitome is always then very good when it is very short and not very long. So you remember that when we did the prayer, that we had as an epitome what you have here under the title on the left-hand side. You have the title subject of chapter. Do you see that where we are on the left-hand side? And then horizontally we get those main epitomes that epitomize the chapter in really metaphysical terms. Instead of saying prayer, we saw that that chapter contains what? Namely, prayer is a spiritual understanding of God. So Mrs. Eddy takes it out from mere belief, from sentiment, from rituals, from a rosary, and it says now it has to do with a spiritual understanding of God, which she says you can't get that without really unselfed love. So which through unselfed love, what is unselfed love? Unselfed love means that there is no self involved. It's not unselfish. In an unselfish term means that a person is involved that puts away his ego as to being the first thing. But unselfed is much bigger than that, which acknowledges no personal ego, no self. So that which through unselfed love brings us, and now this is the big point, brings us into unity with the perfect nature of God. So prayer is that very first step that says, how can I be one with reality? It's not enough to say that there is a reality, that that reality is spiritual, and that reality exists. That wouldn't mean anything to us, because we want to take part in that reality and not just only look at it through thinking, but we should be one with it. We should be the very fact of that reality. And therefore, the main point in the word is always how to get into unity with God. That's the approach to God. The word is always the approach to God, to the nature of God. So here we see what is involved in prayer. In prayer is involved a spiritual understanding of God. That's the very first thing. We must understand God. We can only understand God through that unselfed love, where we put Mary out of the way, as Mrs. Eddy would say, where we put person out of the way, where we don't have any more a person as a factor in our consciousness. And that brings us into unity with the perfect nature of God. So that brings to us that oneness with God. And without first finding our oneness with God, we have no basis on which to work. If you don't find that oneness right away, then all the other chapters are only texts. They are only explanations that are outside of us, because we first have to find our inward unity with God. And this is the cornerstone. So prayer is, so to say, the cornerstone of the whole chapter, of the whole textbook. If we go to the 12th chapter on practice and try to practice on the basis of the 12th chapter only, then we try to read and try to understand the 12th chapter without a prayerful attitude, and then it misses everything. Then that text then is outside of us. We look at it, we read it. Whereas if first within us we find our unity with God, then the 12th chapter has power. So this is the first step, prayer. And then we come to Atonement and Eucharist, which is the next step, which shows us what is now necessary in order really to have that unity with God. And so we had as an epitome for Atonement and Eucharist, through man's unity with God, we overcome all that is unlike God in ourselves. So can you see, I take the main point of prayer, namely unity with God, and build further, or Mrs. Eddy does that, and builds further, now Atonement and Eucharist, and says, now, what effect has that unity with God? So you can see, we start out in Atonement and Eucharist with that unity with God, and see what does that do. Naturally, it does away with everything that is unlike God in us. I cannot be one with God and at the same time be at one with the very counterfeit of God. That is not possible. So we can see that therefore this attitude of prayer must bring about the willingness really to put away or to overcome everything that is unlike God in ourselves. So the accent may be on ourselves. Yes. Then on to marriage and take up that unity again and say, now if we have that unity with God and we are no more one with that which is God unlike, then that spiritual unity in God brings forth a higher humanity. Now we get to the Christianity is always the outcome of the Christ idea. We get to the demonstration. Christianity is at the point of demonstration. We get the demonstration first of that unity with God. Namely, the whole chapter on marriage shows us that we get a higher humanity. Not yet the idea man. First, it is necessary that man, that the humanhood of manhood is getting a higher tone and reaches a higher tone. So there we have the demonstration of that unity. So up to this point, you can see the main point is really that word, that approach to God. It says our approach to God is not through praying on our knees. It's not possible through a rosary. It's not possible through rituals. It is possible through understanding, which brings us into unity with God. So that which is within me is of the same nature as that which is God. That the mind that is God is the same mind as my mind. I have no other mind but that mind which is God. Then I have a oneness of mind. And that oneness of mind in atonement and Eucharist does not allow that something that is mind unlike, God unlike, to exist any further. So our prayerful attitude is that which gives us that power, that spiritual power, which is necessary to get rid of everything that is unlike us, unlike the God qualities. And in the measure, now we come to marriage, in the measure as I do that, and it's always in the measure because I can't do that in one day, or in 1 second, or in 1 year, and I don't think in one lifetime, but we can only do it step by step. But in that measure, as I find that unity in God, what do I see, what happens as an outcome of that consciousness, namely a higher humanity, a better sense of manhood and humanhood. Then, always when one has done the first three, then one comes to science, and then everything is lifted up to the essentials of being. Then we come to the chapter 4, Christian Science versus Spiritualism, which is the word of science, and we have seen that that chapter gives the following epitome, where we have seen that scientific understanding reveals that in the one infinite spirit, God and his likeness, spiritual man, are inseparable. Now, instead of having unity with God, I have established already this inseparability of God and man. I come now in science always to the factual. Science always shows me that fact which existed before Abraham was, that fact which underlies the first three. You see, in the first, second, and third, I was establishing my unity with God. How can I establish my unity with God if behind that would not already lay the fact that since time immemorial, God and man was one, was inseparable? So the science side always shows us the eternality of that which has been presented in the word Christ and Christianity. And here in the fourth chapter, it is very, very evident that that fourth chapter has a completely different tonality or attitude compared with the first three chapters. The first three chapters have a lot to do with the human standpoint, with the relative standpoint, that wants to lay down the relative standpoint and tries to be one with the absolute standpoint. So through Word and Christ and Christianity here, we find a higher human level. But science comes along and says, you only could do that because from eternity to eternity there was the fact that God and man was always one. man had not to become one. He had not to find his unity with God. He already had it, only that he didn't understand it. So understanding is the key to the science, and here to the fourth chapter. That if you understand, then you understand that you have always been one with God and God one with you. That there was always an inseparable coexistence between God and man. So this would lead us actually first through that, through those first four chapters to the final scientific insight that God and man coexisted since time immemorial. Yeah. So these are the main epitomes, and we see also that in that fourth chapter, you remember, we had three main parts in it that were quite different from each other, that all three parts had another scientific approach or another scientific angle to that coexistence of God and man. Namely, you have there as part one, and you see where I am in the last main column, has three parts in it, and part one says, there with the overtone of soul and life, we will see that when we go through that, the epitome, that scientific understanding, that's the point of the fourth side of the city, that scientific understanding analyzes the fact that God and his idea constitute the only immortal existence. Now we come to the point where we begin to realize now what does that mean that we understand the coexistence of God and man, that unity of God and man. How do we understand it? So the first part says this understanding first of all analyzes to us what God and his ideas are, what constitutes God and his ideas. Namely, as the only immortal existence, as the only isness of being. And naturally shows through its counterfeit what is just an elusive sense of God. So we get the great sense of analysis there. With that analysis we have seen, Mrs. Eddy tackles the second part, which had a completely different aim and goal in view. Namely, how scientific understanding uncovers. So scientific understanding, part one, analyzed. In part one, scientific understanding begins to uncover. It has to uncover what is under the cover, that is, what we haven't seen to be as reality, what was covered up through misunderstanding. And so we had here in part two, which has the overtone of mind and truth, that scientific understanding alone can really distinguish between what is real and what is unreal. A very important point in every scientific treatise that we have to know what is real and what is unreal. Here we have that big question that Mrs. Eddy asked, how can we distinguish between ideas and illusions? That's that second part, and shows through the seven subjects how we have to be very careful not to be fooled by the human mind, so that only the divine mind can tell us really what are facts and what are illusions. And then third, the third part, with that overtone of spirit and love, shows again that scientific understanding here as annihilating. You remember how Mrs. Eddy said that Christian Science was revealed to her as one intelligence, analyzing, uncovering, and annihilating the illusions of mortal mind. So here you have that annihilation in the third part, again a completely different treatise that she gives, showing how scientific understanding, which can distinguish between what is idea and what is illusion, can therefore, by claiming that which is ideational, by claiming that, can actually spiritualize our understanding to the point where then finally we only have the union of man and God as coexistent and co-eternal. So here we have a great range within those four chapters, that great range which says, I start out with a desire to know God as he is. That was the very first subject on page one. And ends up then with showing, fundamentally, you can understand that you are always one with God. Since time immemorial, you coexisted with God. You are co-eternal with God. And that gives then the scientific statement of that unity. So we have to have a spiritual sense, really, of those four very different tones, aspects, themes, subjects that distinguish, really, each chapter from the other. And you can easily see that they are Word as Word, Word as Christ, Word as Christianity, Word as Science. Why can you easily see it? We have always Word as that which defines God. That runs over the whole first four chapters. It defines the nature of God first by our approach to that God as he is, namely through prayer, by finding our unity with God, our inner spiritual agreement with God. Once we have found that, we can see that the dominant Eucharist acts as a Christ idea, namely as that which does away with all that is within us unlike God. In the measure as it does away with all that is unlike God, more and more that which is like God comes into focus, is being established, that the third chapter, you see the next step, and which shows that we gain a higher sense of humanhood. And finally, we come to the word as science, which says, this all is only possible because from everlasting to everlasting, the fact, the scientific fact was there that God and man is one. If God and man were not one and had not always been one, we would not have been able to find our unity with God. That's why we saw then in the last chapter how there everything that still had a human connotation was dropped, and that only the spiritual and scientific facts were presented. Yes. So all those who have studied with me over the last three months will remember that. So we have done already that the titles of the chapter through the epitomes, epitomizing the chapters. And so we could go further in our summary of the four chapters and consider first the prayer. Prayer. If we go to prayer, then we can remember what was more or less the main point in prayer. What is that which enables us, so to say, to find our spiritual unity with God, as being one with God? What are the fundamental points that are there? And we have seen that the chapter on prayer, right at the beginning, the first subject of mind, was presenting the whole sevenfold nature of God right away. It was saying right away, God is intelligence, mind. God is substance, spirit. God is unchangeable, soul. God is harmony, principle. God is the fullness of life and gives us more than what we can accept. That God has already done his work, truth. And that at the point of love, really he shows that that who is immutable right has his work is done, it's finished, so that he can go right out from the very first page, out from the fact that God's work is done. The thing that I have to see that that God is unchangeable, that he is the nature of isness, that it is not the nature that will grow, but that is always what it was and what it is and ever will be, unchangeable, and already at hand. So that which brings us into unity really with that unchangeable isness of being and God's perfection is that we now have to accept this unity. That Jesus' prayer, as she says here in this chapter, that Jesus' prayers were deep and conscientious process of man's unity with truth and love. See, that is now prayer to accept that perfection of God as our perfection and to see that God cannot withhold anything because God is perfect, cannot withhold anything. Therefore, that God will cover all our needs that we need and therefore that we let God determine the reward, that we cannot prescribe to God what he should do, when he should do, and how he should do it, that we are at the position where we accept, really, that God needs all our means, that he works through grace. And it gets a great sense that everything is done from God's point of view through grace, and that we let God determine our reward, that we let God determine what he wants to bring out within us as demonstration, that we cannot prescribe him what kind of demonstration we should make, and when we should make it, and through what means we should make it, and how we should make it. We have to have that attitude of letting God do his own work, and he does it through grace. So that we can see that only the divine in us can approach God as the divine. That nothing opposite of God, foreign to God, can approach God. So that only that mind, which is the mind of Christ, can approach God. That only spirit that is within me can really approach and unite with spirit. And so you can see that only that which is God-like within me can really pray properly. Anything else cannot pray properly. Anything that has an attitude of lack, of limitation, of wanting to get something, all that is not prayer. Prayer is therefore that we actualize within ourselves, that we modify within ourselves all that is mind-like, spirit-like, soul-like, principle-like, life-like, truth-like, soul-like. If we activate that within us, then it prays within us. That's prayer. Okay? Tomorrow we go through the subject.